Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Yeah, I want to echo Debbie Kennedy. You know, you guys were awesome. I thought most listeners to KLW hate my show. But you really, never before. You doubled the amount of my goal. They had this goal for me, and you guys, like, donated a lot. Like, you guys are pretty darn awesome. Maybe you do like me, you know, Sally Field said, you know, you do, maybe you like me. Anyway, all right, enough of this. You know what? I decided, in fact, I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to be a curmudgeon. You know, my real personality, the truth is, I'm kind of a, you know, I find it much more interesting to be critical. You know, just say, oh, good, it's really nice, that's nice, that's nice, that's boring. I find it more interesting to find what's to criticize. And so I thought I would let my inner curmudgeon come out today. And I made a list over the last couple of weeks when I was planning to do the show to all the things that I can say negative about related to the world of work and career. Because, you know, especially California, but America is the land of positivism, upbeatness. You can do it all, no matter what. Just work hard and everything is possible. Well, here is, I got about 10 or 12 or 15 of these things. And I will share what I think are shibboleths, that is, conventional wisdom that's stupidly wrong, false optimism. And we'll share them, hopefully, to expand your mind. but I'll also get down and dirty practical with you. And I may or may not be negative. I may be able to withhold my negativity and be reasonably positive with you. Who knows? So if you are stuck, if you have a problem, don't call now. I'm not ready for you. But in a little while, after I finish doing a little curmudgeonly stuff, I'll give out the phone number, and then you can call, and I'll torture you. I mean, I will help you with your career, doing what I call a three-minute workover. Okay, but first, you know what word? I don't think I'm allowed to say this word, so I'll just say P-I-S-S. Am I not allowed to say the word, am I? Yeah, sort of. Pisses me off. is the word teamwork. I know that people genuflect before teamwork. Well, I'm a team player. It's a team effort. I couldn't have done it without my team. Now, this is what's going to really piss you off. I think that most of the people who call for more teamwork are people who are losers, people who can't do much on their own, and they do very little, and they rely on the team to do most of it. They contribute. They really are. They're like parasites on the team. If you, and this is, now here's where we get to the positive side. Let's say you are not one of those people, and you are efficacious. You are somebody who doesn't need the team. In fact, when you get on a team, you kind of have this pit in your feeling in the pit of your stomach. Oh, no, I'm going to end up doing all the work for them, or I'm supposed to rely on them, and I know they're not going to pull their weight. They're never going to do his work as good as I. Don't necessarily succumb. Individualists unite. Fight for the right to do individual work. It's not only going to be less frustrating for you, you're going to be more motivated, of course, because you're going to have ownership. That's a word we're allowed to use, ownership. Well, you'll have more ownership in the product, and the product will often be better. Because you're not in a team that's got to get consensus and we have to get buy-in from everybody, which reduces everything to the lowest common denominator. You can be bold. You can come up with a new innovation. No breakthroughs have ever been created by committee. You can quote me on that. So it's going to create bolder solutions and faster because you're not waiting for seven. You know, the people on a team who love teamwork, they tend to be the kind who don't respond to emails. So you ask for their feedback or their contribution and they take forever. Whereas if you do it yourself and you're motivated and you know what you're doing, you don't have to coordinate. You don't need a project manager who's going to go and coordinate all of your disparate efforts. You know what you're doing. So my first curmudgeonly career observation of the day is that teamwork sucks. Sometimes. Yeah, there's a need for it. But right now, we treat it like apple pie. It's like it's at the core of what is good in the world. Whereas in reality, maybe a more balanced approach is right. That sometimes, yeah, you need a team. But sometimes you need a cowboy or, okay, a cowgirl to get it done individually. My next curmudgeonly idea is this. Procrastinators do drive me crazy. You know, I have given many, many talks to quite successful people like college presidents. And I ask them a question. How many of you, ask them to raise their hand, how many of you consider yourself a procrastinator? 10%, 15%. But I also do a lot of pro bono work where I do free talks at the groups of unemployed people. And I ask them to raise their hand and ask you, you know, how many of you consider yourself a procrastinator? 85, 90% raise their hand. It's career cancer. And one of the things that procrastinators believe, which is totally, and I'm being unvarnished with you here today, stupid, is they engage in the magical thinking that delaying will be worth it, that somehow they will get more insight if they delay, or they'll be more in the mood, they'll be more up for it. Well, yes, maybe 10% of the time, fresh eyes can help, but 90% of the time, delaying merely makes matters worse. You wait till the last second and say, oh, crap, I got to get it done now, and they race and they get it done, and there's a million errors, or it's certainly not done well, or they don't get it done at all. They get overwhelmed because there's 30 tasks they're procrastinating on, and they get overwhelmed by it all, and they bury their head in the pillow and with a joint. Stop with the magical thinking that delay is going to be worth it. And stop with it. You don't need all the self-help books. You know, there have been books, workshops, trainings, all kinds of profit-making opportunities on how to overcome procrastination. In the end, as corny, as simplistic as it sounds, perhaps not understanding that really procrastination is fear of failure, fear of success, fear of loss of control, fear of loss of surrendering to authority. In the end, if you know you should be doing it, if you got an assignment you're supposed to do, whether it be cleaning out the garage or do your work assignment, in the end, it comes down to growing up. Stop magical thinking, I'll do it later. You must start doing it now, the nanosecond you're given the assignment. Next, curmudgeonly, let's let our listeners know what you're listening to. You're listening to the Curmudgeon Hour. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. I am throwing down the gauntlet. I am not being my usual career counselor, nice self that has to have a bias toward positivity, and talk show host who has the bias toward positivity, because that's what we expect in nice land of California. We must be nice and positive and earn the positivity. But reality, some of the most successful and efficacious people are people who are positive when they can be, but tough and negative when they must be. Next bit of curmudgeonly observation, resume writers. They've been proliferating like bunnies, like flies in the spring. They proliferate by the millions. Hiring a resume writer, it's like hiring a pro to write your college application essay. Remember that employers use resumes to not just evaluate your work history, but evaluate your ability to write, your ability to organize, your ability to think, your ability to handle all the details, make sure you're not having spelling errors or whatever errors. So having somebody else do your work, you are completely deceptive. You're not only deceptive and unfair to the boss, who's then going to be saddled with you, crappy employee, who couldn't even write your own resume, but to the more honorable, better qualified applicant who was honest enough to do his or her own resume. And the resulting products or services or whatever the company produces is going to be worse because they hired you who cheated, that is the real word, and hired a resume writer to do your work for you. Let me ask you this. If paying a pro to write your resume were ethical, why don't those resumes say, resume written by Jane Jones, professional resume writer? Nobody would do that because everybody really knows it's unethical. But like we do so often with so many other things, we just close our eyes and go, la, 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 so we don't hear any of the stuff that I'm saying. Hiring a resume writer makes you a cheat. Not just to the employer again, but to the more honorable and more qualified coworker, and to the coworker, to the applicant, job applicant, and the coworkers who you'd be working with, and ultimately results in a worse product or service. I love this story. I had a client came to me after she had an abysmal failure. She wanted to work for this website that caters to middle-aged women. She really wanted to work for them. And there was a job open as like an IT webmaster kind of person. She had really, really marginal qualifications. But she was good with her mouth, and she talked her way into the job, and she got BS references and people to say she was great in tech and it was really her boyfriend. And she got a job. And she screwed up the entire web server so that people couldn't access the website for a while. Of course, she got fired. But then she came to me, Marty, could you tell me how am I going to explain to future employers that I lasted so long at this company? Well, that's what happens when you BS your way into a job, whether it's hiring a resume writer or BSing in your interview. I hope she rots in hell. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco, your curmudgeon for the hour, abandoning all the Mr. Nice Guy. No more Mr. Nice Guy, at least for this hour. All right, now, if you dare, having listened to all this, I guess I used it before, piss and vinegar, might as well, and you're still willing to take the risk of incurring my wrath or my encouragement, and you have a career problem. Because you've been unemployed for 20 years, because you have been smoking all that pot all the time and just lost all your motivation. Or you unfairly got fired. You were such a wonderful employee, but that boss didn't realize it and dumped you. Or you're 50 years old and you're still meditating, trying to think that career answers are going to descend like manna from heaven. Whatever your career problem is, I will at least try to help you get a baby step forward. We'll take a baby step forward with it. You'll get a straight shooting answer, which we don't get very often. That much you'll get from me. Phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco on KELW for what I call a 3-minute workover. 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Oh my God, somebody, there's a masochist in the audience already. The phones are ringing. All right, well, we're waiting for the calls to come in here. I have one more. You know, I'm going to stay with the resume thing for a minute. Well, let me use an analogy. If you pad your bra or you pad your jockstrap to try to get in, so to speak, you're going to be seen as deceptive. Eventually, they're going to see what's underneath. It's the same with job hunters who write a resume that hides their age. They think they're being so clever. Oh, I think I'll leave the dates off when I got my college degree. Oh, that'll fool them when they see. They're going to see your wrinkled puss when you get in. And then they'll realize you were trying to be deceptive, idiot. Or you've had a gap in your resume that's wider than the Grand Canyon. And so you decide, oh, I've been a consultant. Oh, that's going to fool them a whole lot. Then you go in there to the interview and they say, well, tell me about the consultancy. And you're starting to do a tap dance that Fred Astaire couldn't do. You don't think any employer with half a brain is going to know? So stop with the BS. Truthfully, seriously, cosmically and pragmatically, the wisest thing you can do in applying for jobs is that you are essentially trying to find a match. It's more like a match.com thing where you're trying to find a match between what you bring to the table and what the employer wants. Cosmically, that is best for you, the employer, for society. But instead, all we think about is we want to sell them. No, selling them, ultimately, it may come back to bite you. It may not. But really, cosmically, do you really want to put lipstick on a pig? Do you really want to put... a lie in a veneer to get the job? Is that what you would want to tell your children what you want to do? Speak your truth. I mean, I swear, if I took, let's say I did take 2 years off and I was not a consultant, I wanted to travel. I wanted to build a boat with my friend and see if we could make it sail to Hawaii. And I said exactly what I did. I said in my resume, in my cover letter, I said, after 16 years of relentless delaying gratification from kindergarten through college, I decided I was going to finally, while I'm young, healthy, and energetic, I'm going to go and have some fun and do some interesting things. And I built that boat, and I went and I did read these cool things I wanted to read, and I did stay-at-home dad or whatever it was. But now I've kind of got it out of my system, and now I'm eager to go back to work. Don't you think that somebody writing that, the wrong employee, the idiot employer who's just narrow and slavish, will just say, oh, he took a break. He may not want to go back to work. But the right employee will say yes. So stop with the BS. This is the Curmudgeonly Hour with Work with Marty Nemco. It's fun. I'm having a great time. I don't know about you. Anyway, if you would like a 3-minute workover with me in my current curmudgeonly state, the phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, is that me?
It is.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to use my real name because, you know, I'm a real person living in San Francisco with a job.
And I may come to your house in my curmudgeonly mood and just yank you out of the house. You better not tell me your name. Just call yourself Brunhilde or something.
How about Bonnie?
Bonnie. Are you a Bonnie girl, a kind of an Irish Bonnie girl? Is that what you are?
Half Irish.
Half Irish. Well, there you go. So you're giving yourself away already. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so I was fortunate enough to recently get a promotion after 2.5 years of attempting.
Mazel tov.
Yes, and it unfortunately coincided with a hugely stressful point in my life of having to deal with moving after living in the same house for 15 years and, mm-hmm. you know, stressful, so distracting. Mm-hmm. But I really like my new job. I really like my new supervisor and my coworkers. And I am, of course, because that's a promotion, I'm on probation.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep screwing up the same things around following protocol.
Okay.
And
is that because you're distracted and stressed?
It's partly because it's just I'm
nature.
Kind of a cowboy.
Yeah, so you hate rules and stuff like that, is that right?
I have a hard time dealing with the bureaucracy factor of my job.
And are you in a public sector job where bureaucracy is rife?
Yes.
Exactly. So you've got all these stupid rules, and you know, if you're working for a company, I'd say, well, see if you can go about changing it, but that ain't going to happen so fast in government, is that right?
Well, and it's certainly not something I want to try and do while I'm on probation.
Yeah, well, it depends. Usually, yes, but let's take a moment to evaluate that. Let's say I know you're on probation and you say you like your boss. If there were one or two processes whose protocol you find anathema and you were to go to him or her and explain why you think this might be better, would that, and he did it in a very measured, polite, controlled way, either in writing or in verbally, if that works better for you, is the risk-reward ratio of doing that bad?
Yes.
Okay, so you shouldn't do that. Okay. And is it possible that you are wrong, that sometimes, indeed, procedures are put in place because after working with, you know, many, many people and overseeing how it works and doesn't work, that the current version of the protocol represents the best thinking that has accrued all that time, and that you might need a measure of humility and put your stirrups and cowgirl stuff away, and it's time to walk your horse around the corral a little bit.
I know from personal experience and the benefit of hindsight that is in fact often true, where I will be railing against some policy, and it's the only reason I'm railing about it is because I'm actually ignorant of the whole process, and I don't see how all, because, you know, in a giant bureaucracy, things are all connected, and if I don't see the whole picture, then I'm not working with all the facts, but I go and, spout off my opinion.
Exactly. So, you know, most cowgirls, I love this kind of fun analogy, most cowgirls are they're religious. The whole cowgirl, cowboy country is very Christian, is very religious, and at the core of Christianity is humility. Is this notion that, you know, you are humble before God, you are humble, you don't want to be too willful, all that stuff. So is it time, cowgirl, to invoke that part of being a cowgirl and have some good humility, and instead of the god being the goddess in the sky, the goddess of the bureaucracy having some wisdom, especially since your track record suggests that you have been burned by that in the past, you've been thrown from your horse in the past. Is it merely a matter of keeping that one word, humility, writing it on your hand, and certainly when you get to protocol, treating it with a reverence? Let's stay with the religious thing. It's a Sunday, so almost sacred, that you are going to treat that protocol as with reverence and make sure, and you'll try to have fun following it to a T, at least till your probational period is over, and then you can, you know, wonder, you can perhaps muse about getting back on the horse and whipping it around the track.
Yeah, I guess what I was hoping to get from you was some kind of, like, I don't know, like, how can I, like, stop myself?
Slow down. What if I said it's a matter really of slowing down? So that when you have something that is a process that needs to be done, you take some deep breaths. Cowgirls tend to be impulsive. They tend to jump on the horse and, you know, try to jump a fence. So is it a matter of slowing down and saying, okay, I know I'm excited about my promotion. I want to prove myself. But is the way to prove yourself, ironically, not by speeding up, but by slowing down?
Well, yeah, I mean, first and foremost, and this is what, you know, I'm really enjoying my boss and the way that she's dealing with me so far. It's only been a month, but I really appreciate the way she interacts with me. And she just keeps stressing, just meet the minimum requirements of your job. Don't be going off and trying to, like, you know, institute new policies or get giant programs happening.
Exactly.
Just do your job.
This is not the Grand National. You are in a local dude ranch, and you are just, you know, you just need to do your job for now.
Yeah.
And I'm not asking you, you know, I don't want to kill your spirit. The cowgirl spirit wants to be, you know, doing dressage, jumping, whatever, doing a lot of jumping. But for now, you've got to walk and canter before you can gallop. Is that right?
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, this promotion that I got, although I have the degree for the job, my training is minimal. And, of course, like most degrees, doesn't actually teach you how to do the job.
Of course not. It's unbelievable. My daughter went to Yale Law School, and she and, like, all the rest of her Yale Law School graduates, despite it being the most prestigious law school in America, didn't know squat about how to be a lawyer. Indeed, I love telling the story of the dean of Yale Law School was called in the middle of the night by somebody frantic who had been arrested for drunk driving and was put in jail overnight, and he was freaking out about spending the night over in jail. And he called the dean of Yale Law School, Anthony Cronson, asking, how do I get me out of here? And Cronson was forced to admit, I don't know. He didn't even know how to get a drunk driver out of jail on bail. This says a lot about the academic world. So you don't know squat about the practicalities. So that's why you may want to get a mentor. If slowing down is not enough, if having some humility is not enough, there's somebody either within your organization who either currently or who retired or in a parallel organization who knows the ropes, who knows how to do stuff in government, which it really is labyrinthine. You know, do you need to find a mentor, or is it your boss who should be your mentor?
Well, I think, you know, my boss has got an incredible amount of responsibility of her own.
Mm-hmm.
And part of what, you know, I am stressing out about is I've got so much information to absorb and so many new practices and processes to learn that she, you know, she shoots all this information out at me and I don't absorb it all.
Right.
And then I don't want to make myself look stupid by having to ask her to repeat herself.
Am I correct that what you should do is one of the, I'm delighted that you called, by the way. I may have started this show curmudgeonly, but I'm really thrilled with your degree of introspection and how much you're revealing here. This is great. So should you either record, when you meet with her, should you record, take a little, those little digital recorders and record them and listen? Should you take the written protocols that exist and, you know, to hell with work-life balance for a while, instead of watching the stupid sitcom that you watch at home, read that thing slowly when you're not under stress, take work home. Is it really a matter of just putting some more time in slowly?
Well, that's definitely would help, although I do have this giant ordeal in my personal life that is also time-sensitive as far as moving, you know. And so I'm kind of trying to do that, although there's certain aspects of the job that are impossible to do when I'm not, you know, like, the, you know, information.
That's a yes but. You know what? Now I'm going to turn the curmudgeon. That's sounding like a yes butter. A winner would say, right, I am going to, you know, do some combination of those things. I am going to record some of what she's saying when she's going rapid fire. I will maybe ask her some more questions. I will read the protocols more slowly at work and at home. You're not just 100% of the time moving, and maybe you're making more out of moving. I'll stay in this curmudgeonly mode. My wife and I, she was, when she first came to Napa as the assistant superintendent, she rented an apartment because she didn't know how long she was going to stay. But once she knew she wanted to commit to a life, you know, working in Napa, she went and we bought a house. We went from that apartment and moved to the house being like Sunset Magazine could have come in and taken pictures in one weekend. We didn't know, there was no drama. We realized what was important and what wasn't important. And we just made executive decisions. Toss, keep, bring, rent truck, hire kids to help us move stuff. You know, it was done in a weekend and we laughed and we had a great time. And by Sunday night, we were sitting in our gorgeous house. Are you making too big a deal out of this stupid move?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's like, I've lived in this house longer than I've lived anywhere in my entire life. And so is my son. So I have nothing to compare it to.
But it doesn't need to be, you know, there's more stuff. Truthfully, I really think that even if you've been living there and if you don't agonize over each decision, Salvation Army, take, storage, three choices, storage, Salvation Army, take. And then, you know, get the help you need. There's all kinds of, everybody's unemployed today or underemployed. You can get people to help you and just do it and don't go nuts about, oh, should I paint the place puce before I go and move? The world doesn't end. Make the decision. Life, you know, have perspective. Just do it. And otherwise, you're going to lose your damn job.
Yeah, right.
Am I right? Okay. Well, I'll quit while I'm ahead. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. If you're ready for some tough love, I'm ready to give it. I am, I'm full of piss and vinegar today for some reason. And if you would like, if you'd like some career help, whether you're 20 or 70, self-employed, employed by a company, a nonprofit, government agency, want to fight me about some career issue, I'm in the mood. The phone number here for what I call a three-minute workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hi, it's you. Hello.
Hi. Hold on a second, Greg. Hi. There's a great, I'll call you right back, Greg. There's a great book called Why Employees Don't Do What They're Supposed to Do, and I think Marty would really love it. So
I am Marty.
Oh, hi, Marty.
Hi.
Am I on air?
Yeah, tell me. So why employees don't do what they're supposed to do. Tell me more.
So I had this employer, and I've hired and fired maybe 70 or 80 people, so I've been on both sides.
Yeah.
And I had an employer, and he kept getting very agitated with me, and, you know, I'm a tech guy and didn't really know what the problem was. It's a small book called Why Employees Don't Do What They're Supposed to Do, and what it does is it enumerates all of the reasons why employees don't do what they're supposed to do, like they don't know why they should do it, they don't know how to do it, they don't know what they're supposed to do, and it's a simple little checklist.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of times that people are not really on board, like your last caller, you know, when you really get into it, maybe she doesn't do it because she doesn't know how to do it.
Exactly. She admitted it after a while. That's exactly right. We talked for a while. And first you said she was stressed and this and that. But, yeah, in the end, she didn't know a lot of what she – it wasn't just that she was a cowgirl and wanted to do it her own way. She didn't get it. You're absolutely right.
Exactly. And then, you know, with prima donnas, you know, maybe they think their way is better.
Right.
And you have to convince them that it's not. And I found it was a real simple checklist. And when I got it, I found that I actually improved my happiness.
I love it. I will get it, and I will take a look at it and probably mention it on the show, or even have the guy or the author of the guy or woman who wrote the thing on the show. It was a great call. I appreciate it. Is there anything I can do to help you?
No, thanks very much.
I appreciate the call very much.
Thank you.
He is an honored member of the Work with Marty Nemco workforce. I love when people make good contributions. Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hello, it's you.
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Me?
Yes, you.
Okay. Well, I have a situation where I have been a civil servant for the last, a long time. And my job is beginning to become very, very unstable. And I put together a resume, but I'm a little bit lost about how to pursue a job outside of civil service. And I'm just completely flummoxed, and it's keeping me from moving forward with the whole process.
Yeah, there's a terrible bias against civil servants because they don't believe they're civil servants. They believe they're civil takers who get all this, you know, great salary and benefits and holidays and vacation days, and you can't fire them unless they raped a child and, you know, all of that. So, yes, it is very hard after a long time in civil service. They think you're going to be lazy and, you know, and that you don't begin to know anything about working in a place where there is much more, more dynamism.
And also, the other thing is, I don't know what the hell to do with myself.
Okay, well, that's why you called the right place. I will help you with that. Yeah. So great. So tell me a few. This is the core thing that I like to do on the show called the 3-Minute Workover. So tell me a little bit. Give me a few clues about who the hell you are, and we'll see what we can come up with for you.
All right. Well, I had worked for a long time in public transportation. Had some health problems.
Doing what? Were you a truck driver? Were you a bus driver, or what were you?
I worked for a bus company. Yes.
And what did you? You fix the buses? You drive the buses? Did you?
No, I was a driver, and then I ended up working in scheduling and moving away from driving. And because of some issues that happened, I left that employment, and then I ended up working in a clerical position, and I've done really well in the clerical.
Can I be a voyeur and tell you what were the issues that happened that made you leave the driving and the scheduling?
Well, this is really going to out me, but it's okay. I don't care. I lost my leg.
Oh, okay. What happened?
I had cancer.
Oh, okay. I'm very sorry.
It's okay. Yeah, it was years ago, but it shifted everything. It changed my direction.
Of course. Tell me about that for a minute. We'll get to your happiness in the clerk and all, but. Let's see how we can. First of all, I want to understand what was that like for you as a human being to lose your leg. As corny as it sounds, but really, what was it like, and how do you view it now? And tell me about that.
Well, the cancer was horrible, and I was in pain for months and months, and there were lots of operations. But the losing the leg was actually one of the most liberating things in my life. Like, it really helped me to. To be happy again and move on from the idea that I was going to die. And I just accepted it and got back on my horse and rode. I mean,
wow.
I didn't waste a lot of time. It took me about a year or two to get back to being able to walk normally and be participating in life fully. But I've been really happy ever since, and I don't look back at it. It hasn't really been a bad thing for me. It actually cut away a lot of BS in my life. You know, it helps you to clarify and see what's important.
Wow. What was the BS you cut out of your life?
Oh, you know, all of the stuff that you carry with you from when you're a kid and all the excuses you can make in your life, it all just sort of, the surgeon took all my anxieties away. I can't explain why,
wow.
But it just did. It just changed my life.
Okay, so now let's go back. You said you were actually quite happy as a clerk. Tell me more.
Oh, well, I really had never used computers before I worked in this office, and I just sort of... it took a long time. There was a long learning curve, and believe me, there were some people in my office who were not favorably disposed to my succeeding in the job, but I overcame all of my obstacles.
Why? Why would anybody in your office, here was this guy who lost his leg to cancer, and why would they not be, quote, favorably disposed to seeing you succeed?
All I can say is there are people in the world who are not always your friend, and they will sometimes work against you, and you have to be your own best advocate, and I've done that. And I mean, it was just, you know, there's just sometimes in life you meet people who aren't all that nice.
And they have these biases toward certain kinds of people.
Absolutely.
And sometimes, and we're not allowed to say it, but I'm in sometimes it really does relate to race and gender, and
absolutely.
And that stuff is, I've seen that, heard it again and again, especially in government. There is, let's just say, across all races, there is a great deal of really malicious behavior from one race to another. Is that a fair statement?
It was all kinds of things, and that is certainly all in the mix.
Right. I know. Okay. So you were working hard to come back from having an amputation from cancer, and you're working hard to be a good clerk or whatever, computer work, and you had some people trying to sabotage you. Continue.
Well, you know, I confronted my demons, I guess, in that environment. I succeeded. Things got better for me. I became much more... able to do my job and started to really comprehend what I'm doing and really enjoying it. However, the economy has turned south, and as I said, I'm a civil servant, and you know, the administrative powers that be they're manipulating things, and I'm finding that I can't live on the money anymore because they've cut salary and they're taking benefits and they're doing a lot of really awful things, and I need to keep a roof over my head,
sure.
And I need to transition into something else, and I don't even know what that something
okay,
else is.
Okay, we'll get that. I'm not letting you out. We're going to take our time here. This is important.
Yeah.
So, of course, as you well know, The benefits of being a civil servant, even if they're cutting back, are much better than most people in the private sector. Is it possible that you could stay within the PERS system or whatever, you know, retirement system and within your organization and just make us a 30 to 45 degree pivot? That is, work for somebody else, work in a different agency, work for something that, that doesn't require you to go and convince the private sector that you're 30 years in civil service in a government agency and now you've lost your leg and that you know, it's going to be a tough climb, pardon the pun. Is there any kind of a pivot you could make? Would you like me to help you try to find what that pivot might be, or you know you need out of that civil service system?
By the way, my phone is beginning to act a little funny. I don't know if it's bad on your end, but
I'm not yet.
A little crazy. I don't think that there is a pivot. I think, like, my job is, you know, I could do a lateral transfer, I suppose, to some other department.
Right.
But,
that's what I'm thinking about.
But it wouldn't change the economic situation for me.
So, in terms of the economic situation, is it possible then that what you need is a sideline? I'm trying to avoid you having to go out into the workforce. You sound, you know, you've done this all these years. You're not. You're over 40, probably over 50. You've got one leg. You've got all the civil service. It's not going to be easy to get hired by somebody. So I'm wondering before I you know, have this succumb to the stupid career counselor bias, if you can do anything. I'm trying to think of something that isn't such a radical change. Do you need a sideline? Would a lateral move and then some kind of a sideline income, like, for example, because I know very little about you, but helping recent amputees to deal psychologically, because it sounds like you've done a fabulous job in dealing with that. What if I said I want you to run groups and individual coaching with people who have lost limbs as a way of adding some side income, as well as then making a lateral move to some other agency where people, instead of out to get you, are going to be supportive of you? What feels right and wrong about that vision?
To be honest with you, and I say this as I'm 47 years old, I am a cancer survivor, and I'm not a young spring chicken at this point.
Right.
That, you know, time, how much time do I spend at work? Like, I thought about getting a weekend job or something, but then you just end up working 7 days a week. And where do you rest? And I do have peripheral health issues as a result of all of this. And
of course.
So I need to take care of myself, but I also need to after the brass ring, and I'm not sure
what that ring is. Okay, so now let's turn to that. I wanted to see if perhaps we could get away with you just making a lateral move and getting a side job, but you can't. And you're also saying the lateral move itself is not good enough. So now we come back full circle to telling me we're really at the starting place. So tell me a few clues about who you are, and I'll try to come up with something that seems to be something that feels realistic and yet exciting and sufficiently remunerative. So tell me a few clues about who you are.
Well, who am I? I don't know. I guess I'm an intelligent person. I'm a literate person. I have definitely more toward the arts than toward, shall we say, maths and sciences. I think I'm an analytical person on a certain level.
Let me ask you this question. Very interesting. Here you are. You're very articulate. You're clearly bright, very well reasoned. I don't know. I'm not denigrating bus drivers or clerks, but you seem brighter and so more articulate than the average bus driver or clerk. How did you end up as a bus driver to begin with?
Because I had a bad situation with my parents, with school and education, and I never finished college and got no real pleasure out of going to school at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the most...
Join the club, dude.
Huh?
Join the club, dude.
Well, it is what it is. I mean,
right.
I didn't finish college,
right.
And when I got to San Francisco, my dad, the one piece of advice that he gave me that was really good was, look, you didn't get a college degree. Because of that, you should go out immediately and find yourself the first civil service job that you can get so that you can have protections and you can have benefits and you
right.
can have
right.
all of these things, and you won't be rich, but you'll have that, and that will help support you. And
right.
I did that.
Right. Okay. All right, go back to so you're literate and you're analytic. Tell me some more about who you are. What do you like? What do you do in your spare time? What have been some of your major accomplishments in or out of work? Tell me a little bit about that.
I have had more than 20 years as a volunteer with a local service organization in San Francisco.
What is that organization, please?
The Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic.
Okay.
And I've been less and less now since because of the illness. But mm-hmm. in the old days, I worked a lot with them from the early 90s.
What did you do best there?
Well, I'll give a plug out. I worked for Rock Medicine, which is a division of the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic.
What
they
is
provide
it?
Mental and physical health services at major events in the Bay Area.
Oh.
And I worked with psychiatric patients and with people who were tripping, I guess you could say, and helped to keep them from going to the hospital and get them back on their feet within a number of hours.
Fantastic. You're doing great. Tell me some more about some things you've accomplished in your life, in or out of work.
Things that I've accomplished in my life, in or out of work. Well, I this is a personal thing, but I have a beautiful garden that I've worked really hard to cultivate and been doing that for a long time.
And what makes you, I'm looking for clues as to your skills. Some people create great gardens because they are, they're very detail-oriented and they have absolutely know exactly how much sun and how the nature of the soil. Others do it because they're just diligent. What makes your garden so good?
I think the diligence, not that I'm any great expert. I just put my back into it and
I see. Okay.
Want to have it, and there it is. And, you work hard, and later on in the season you have something beautiful to show.
What's your first name?
My name's John.
John. John, so we're going to play a game now, and we're going to create a John meter. And the John meter goes from 0 to 10, with 0 means the idea makes you puke, and 10 means it gives you ecstasy.
Okay.
So the idea of working for Bill Graham Presents as being working as the assistant to whoever is in charge of emergency stuff, health problems, when crap happens, that you're going to work as the assistant doing, on site, perhaps doing some of the paperwork, whatever it is. What does that score on the John meter?
Tell me the score ratio again.
0 means the idea makes you puke and 10 means it gives you ecstasy.
Oh, I guess that would be like a 7 or an 8.
Okay, and what keeps it from being a 10?
Well, I guess it could be a 10. I'm not opposed to the idea.
Well, you're going to have
okay.
I want you to be I want to see it could be a 10, but you said your first reaction was 7 or an 8. What keeps that from being perfect?
I don't think anything does. I guess it could be a 10.
Okay. So then what I'm going to ask you to do, because that just combines your unusual event experience, in a medical setting, people who have drug problems, and that's why these rock concerts, whatever, there are people who over, raves or whatever, these, bottle rock or whatever, there's tons of people who get, who have problems. And given your experience both at the free clinic as well as that you've been able to become a guy who can work at a computer at a desk. I'm wondering whether that might be a useful combination of things. So maybe what you need to do is there are probably Bill Graham Presents, because I'm old. That's the one that comes to mind. They still exist, but there's a number of these event producers, including Bottle Rock, this guy named Mayer or whatever. But if you were to make a list of 10 or 20 of the leading event producers, where there tends to be a lot of either drug overdoses or, frankly, violence. There are certain kinds of music events that tend to where there's almost always a violence that accrues. Should you contact? What I'm suggesting is that you write a letter that kind of explains your life story, that says the whole thing. Everything you've said to me. I'll kind of dictate what the letter. I don't want you to copy. You don't have to be able to do that. But the letter would be something like this. This is probably one of the more unusual letters you will have gotten in a while. I used to be a bus driver until I had to lose my leg and then could no longer do so. I'm looking now to make a career change. Over the last 20 years as my avocation, I've worked at the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic, where my specialty was in dealing with the health problems, the overdoses and the like that come from events. So I thought I would contact you to see if you might need somebody who could work in that regard. I'd welcome the opportunity to chat with you sincerely. What do you think about the idea of sending a letter like that to 10 of the heads of event promotions?
Well, I'm not opposed to the idea. The only issue is that I know what the pay scale is.
That's exactly right. And that's
what... going to support me.
I agree. Then
That's the real... You know, San Francisco is a very expensive city.
And it is. All right, let's go from there.
I feel like I'm at a real... You know, a crossroad that I'm not sure how to proceed with this.
Let's talk about. Let's in the limited time we have,
yeah.
I want to come up with the more likely route right now for you to make serious dollars is not getting somebody else to employ you, because right now you're a clerk in civil service. I don't think anybody's going to pay you big dollars, bigger dollars in civil service, let alone with benefits. It's more likely you're going to have to be self-employed. So I'm going to spend the last few minutes chatting about some kind of unusual self-employments and see if any of them float your boat enough that you'd be willing to take it on as a sideline or as a replacement for your current job.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going to play a different game called the optometry game.
Mm-hmm.
And the optometry game, you ever been to the eye doctor and the eye doctor asks you whether it's better with lens one or lens two?
Yep.
So I'm going to give you two different self-employment options and you tell me which simply seals better. Would you rather build raised beds for the millions of San Franciscans who love the idea of growing their own veggies, but they don't have good soil? It's actually quite simple to do, but it's very profitable. Would you rather create raised beds, or would you rather use the readily available commercial software to help people design their gardens?
Wow. That's quite a question. I would probably be more inclined toward the software side of things.
Okay. So would you rather be a garden, we call it a garden coach. So you're using the software to help design it, help them identify, you know, develop plans for how to take care of their gardens, the plan for how to put the irrigation system. So that's one idea. Or would you rather try to be a consultant to these, to various events that you know, as I said, like a rock events, on how to deal with the drug overdose and other problems. They know you're not a doctor, but from the ground, the on-the-ground perspective, trying to sell yourself as this consultant to help them as they plan. Like Bottle Rock, you can be sure, hired consultants galore to help figure out how to deal with every bad contingency from parking to drug overdoses. Would you rather do that, or would you rather be the garden coach?
Well, I certainly would have more expertise doing the show promotion thing than the garden coach.
Okay. So would you rather assemble a team? Would you rather be the consultant on how to deal with drug overdoses, et cetera? Or would you rather start your own event, some kind of an event that... and again, I wanted to take the fact that you had cancer and turn that lemons into lemonade, and the fact that you're an amputee. Would you want to create an expo with, you don't have to do it by yourself, assemble a team of your friends to create an amputee expo where all kinds of resources, practical, physical, psychological, spiritual, whatever, are available for people who are amputees to come, and that could make you a fortune as well as turn that horrible experience that you've had and turn it into a great good for the world. Would you rather be the consultant to the rock events, or would you rather start the Amputee Expo?
Well, I would rather do the Amputee Expo thing, to be honest. That
right.
Sounds interesting.
So what if I said that for today at least, and no one's saying, you know, I am a realist. I'm not saying you're going to necessarily do it.
Right.
But as an initial exploratory activity, think of the one or two human beings who you already know, who you respect and like, and have coffee with them and flesh out the idea. See whether it's realistic or not. Maybe you need a smaller scale version of that. Maybe it's a website that integrates all of these resources for amputees. Maybe it is simply a workshop that you would do at a free in a public library for starters to see if it builds momentum. Most new ideas don't necessarily spring full forth into a massive expo.
Right.
You may want to start with a low risk thing like giving a free seminar at a public library or at the Kaiser Permanente or whatever on that. How does that feel as an initial baby step toward finding something new?
It's certainly food for thought. It definitely opens up some ideas and some possibilities in my mind,
right.
Especially with some of the connections that I have made through my being an amputee. So
terrific, John.
That could certainly be something I could investigate.
Well, you know, if you're at all a regular listener to the show, you know I normally keep listeners, callers on the line for maybe 3-5 minutes. You've been on for roughly 25 because it's been a privilege to talk with you. And the greatest thing you could do for me would be if you would call back in, you know, a week, a month, whenever it's appropriate, to give us a progress report on what's going on with John. Would you be willing to do that?
Sure, sure. And by the way, I really enjoyed listening to you be cantankerous.
Thank you. Well, good. Then what I'll do is I'll let you off the phone. I couldn't be cantankerous talking with you because in my way, I love you. You know, you are everything I like in the world. You are resilient. You have turned a horrible experience into something positive. You sound like a fantastic guy, and you are. You really do seem like a great guy, and so it was a pleasure to be talking with you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, you take care, John. Be well.
Bye. Huh?
Okay, yeah, I really loved him. He's terrific. So, okay, he asked, I shall deliver. I'm not going to take any more calls. I'm going to do some more. For those of you just joining us, I started the show saying that, you know, career counselor types, including me, have to err on the side of positivity. Because people come with career problems, they're already despondent, they're negative, you know, and the last thing you want to do is, you know, give them more curmudgeonly stuff. But I thought I would take the liberty today to, you know, no matter how positive you are by nature, and I can't claim to be, I'm kind of this realist. I'm not an optimist. I'm not a pessimist. I'm not a curmudgeon. I'm not a Pollyanna. I'm in the middle. But there is certainly, I have curmudgeonly thoughts. I have tough love thoughts. And I kind of, in preparing for today's show, assembled a bunch of them and shared them with you with no varnish. Just very briefly, I made fun of teamwork being so deified. I made fun of procrastinators who engage in the magical thinking that delaying is worth it when, in fact, 90% of the time, delaying makes matters worse. I was very critical of resume writers, that it really is like hiring a pro to write your college application essay. If, in fact, hiring a pro to write your resume were ethical, why don't those resume writers write, this resume was not written by the job applicant, it was written by Jane Jones, resume writer. Nobody would. Then I made fun of, I said, just as padding your bra or your jock strap may get you in the door, so to speak, but you'll eventually be known and seen as deceptive. Same with job seekers who write resumes that hide that they think they're being clever in hiding their age or the gap in their resume. By the time the interview shows up, as I use the phrase I use, where they'll see your wrinkled puss and know you are deceptive, and no employer wants to hire a deceptive job applicant. So here are some more of these curmudgeonly career-related thoughts. People get depressed and they get sad and they feel they have to process. They have to work with, they have to wallow in it. They have to see a therapist. They have to complain to their friends all the time. Here is the real antidote to sadness, depression, whatever. It's a to-do list. Taking the baby steps toward improving your career, improving your relationships, whatever. Because a to-do list gives you hope. And it gives you a practical way out. Wallowing, the more you wallow, the more you tend to stay wallowing. The more therapy you have, the more likely, and I don't care whether therapists hate me, the more likely you are to stay wallowing, because it feels good to wallow in some crazy sort of way. But your life is no better. Your mind is dominated. The neurons in your memory are dominated by the woe is me crap. That miserable boss, that miserable spouse, that miserable child, that miserable mistake I made, that miserable... No, the antidote to sadness or depression... Now, I'm not saying there is some depression that is so physiological, so deeply held, that of course you need medication and or cognitive behavioral therapy. I'm not saying no. But for your garden variety, pardon, back to the garden analogy, your garden variety sadness or mild depression, the most likely antidote is hope. And hope comes from a to-do list. What are the little baby steps you need to do to improving your life? Next curmudgeonly thought. People love to dabble. And they, and I hate to use the word, most of them are losers. Because it is fun to dabble. You learn a little bit about this. Oh, that's kind of fun. Well, now we get to the hard part. I got to really study that. No, I don't think so. I think I'll go dabble. So you find something else to dabble with. And that's going to get you nowhere. Nobody wants a dabbler. Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers, that looked at people who became go-to guys and go-to girls about things, found that you need 10 to 20,000 hours of laser focus. That's a word I love to use. Laser focus to become a go-to person. I have stayed a career counselor for 26 years. I sucked when I started. If I said, well, it's kind of getting a little hard here and a little boring, and so I think I'll leave career counseling and I'll try garden maintenance or whatever. You know, I'd be a loser at everything. But yes, I toughed it out. And now it's 26 years later, and I do feel like I can, you know, I've had 4,000 clients. I bring something to the table. When I talked to John, there was consciously and unconsciously, every client I've ever worked with or everybody who I've talked with on this radio show was in my mind somehow, seeing how I could apply it. So, you know, stop with the dabbling. Sure, you can indulge your pleasures. It's fun, but you're never going to get anywhere. Especially in this very tough economy and job market where they want somebody who's got real expertise, not somebody who's just dabbled for a while and then tried to BS their way and sounding like they know a lot by, you know, with some sleight of hand in their interview or resume or cover letter. Laser focus. Not only will your career better be better, but you will put your head on the pillow every night and feel worthy, not like somebody who has the imposter syndrome. So many people went and got PhDs, and they still feel like imposters because the university teaches you theoretical abstract stuff. And unless you're going to be a professor, you don't need so much of the theoretical abstract stuff. You need practical how to be really good at being a cardiologist, a marketer, a psychologist, whatever, a lawyer. And you don't learn that in school, even in medical school. They teach you all this abstract stuff that doesn't have a lot of, you know, too small. Certainly some of it is practical, but way too much time is spent on teaching you stuff that is not likely to be needed in the clinches. The really good doctor, what he really, or she, of course, really needs is the ability when you see somebody walk in, watching the way they breathe, their skin tone, how they talk, what they talk, sensing whether they're withholding, getting them to reveal what's really going on, because really, patient self-report is often one of the best clues to diagnosis. And using not just clinical evaluative data, which, yes, clinical evaluative data matters, but a lot of truth lies between the cracks of that evidence, and having the artistry to really tease out what's really going on. You don't learn that in medical school. They may teach that for 2 minutes, but because these academics, they're all interested in their little arcane research area. Sometimes I wonder whether nurses have better ability to ascertain that than doctors do. And the last thing I want to say before we have to stop for the day. Nonprofits profess to care about people, but their internships rarely lead to jobs. They bring all these internships in, people, and they use them as slave labor. Mainly, they're using it to avoid the minimum wage laws. Oh, good, the Bay Area, everybody loves, you know, nonprofit values, the environment, and people of color, and na-na-na-na-na-na. And so we'll get them, they'll work for nothing. Yay! What kind of valuing of people is that? That is pure hypocrisy. Pure BS. So that ends the hypocrisy hour. The hypocrisy, excuse me, hopefully not. The curmudgeonly hour, the tough love hour here on Work with Marty Nemko. I hope you found it helpful, or at least entertaining. Anyway, that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Debbie Kennedy, and of course, all of you for listening and calling in, especially John. John was terrific. I really hope he got something out of the 25 minutes we spent together. In any case, next Sunday at 11, I will do 3-minute workovers on callers, perhaps more curmudgeonly, perhaps not. I'll be interested in seeing what people email me and tell me what they think about this curmudgeonly approach with hopefully a little humor. And also, most lawyers are unhappy. That is, even if they can land a job, the market's glutted with lawyers. And yet people keep trotting off to law school with dreams of big bucks, dreams of status, or maybe saving the world. Well, I'll talk with Deborah Schneider. She's the author of a book, Should You Really Be a Lawyer? Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
Marty Nemko's Amazon 5-star rated book, How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School, is now available in print, on Kindle, and as an audiobook. And 1,000 of his published articles are free on his website. From there, you also can email him if you'd like coaching on your career or to comment on this program. His site, martynemko.com, that's martynemko.com. You can join Marty again next Sunday morning at 11 for Work with Marty Nemko here on 91.7 KLW San Francisco.